When Jesus is confronted by the woman in today's gospel story, he responds in a way that is almost uncharacteristic for what you expect of the Jesus we read. He and the disciples have just survived the storm on the Sea of Galilee, and then Jesus got into a disagreement with the Pharisees who were trying to discredit him, so he and the disciples left the ever-growing crowds in Galilee and went off into the land of the Gentiles, the land of Canaan. Now, there they could be away from all the faithful Jews who gave them no rest, either wanting miracles or calling Jesus out for failing to live by the law. Some contextual notes. Firstly, Canaan is the land founded by Noah's son Ham. Ham was one of Noah's three sons who was shunned by his family after he saw Noah one night drunk and naked. Noah cursed Ham, whose name he changed to Canaan, and vowed that Canaan would be forever cursed and that his descendants would always be slaves to the descendants of his brothers. Thus, in ancient Israel, the people of Canaan were thought of as accursed and were felt to be beneath the lowliest of Jews. That's the first context. Secondly, the Pharisees thought they were the righteous ones, while if there were any undeserving of God's mercy, well, it had to be this Canaanite woman. The Pharisees and the scribes were the moral police force of Jesus' day. They were the keepers of the law, and as far as they were concerned, that was a ticket to ritual purity. While the Torah law, now the Torah being the first five books of what we call our Bible and what we now not always call the Old Testament, we call them the Hebrew Scriptures, included a great deal of detail, it did not attempt to anticipate every possible scenario. The rabbis who loved God and wanted to keep the law faithfully developed the Mishnah, compiled in the four centuries straddling Jesus' time. In later centuries, they added the Talmud to correct any deficiencies, producing works that totaled 36,000 pages of rules. All right, that's a bit longer than any of the T's and C's you tick when you go to a website. 36,000 rules. Give them their due, though. The Pharisees and scribes were the ones who took faith seriously. In today's language, we might call them the pillars of the church. Their attentiveness to detail reflected their devotion to God. But that's the irony. Seeking to be righteous, pure, and holy, they created a barrier that actually separated them from God. Truth, some of the most difficult people to love I've ever known were religious people. They'll trump your kindness with their morality every time. You can never do enough to please them. If you come to church every Sunday morning, you should have been there Sunday night. If you give a tithe, you should have given more. If you don't drink, smoke or chew to go with the boys that do, you probably need to cut back on your carbs and lose some weight. Have you ever known people like that? You're all giggling a lot. I hope it's not about yourself. In the passage today, the Pharisees and the scribes came all the way from Jerusalem to Galilee to set Jesus straight. Why do your disciples disobey the tradition of the elders? They also criticised him for healing on the Sabbath and for telling people that their sins were forgiven. This man blasphemes, they said. And as far as they were concerned, Jesus himself was impure. Now back to our story. So the Canaanite woman comes hounding Jesus, yelling at him incessantly, "Have mercy on me, Lord, you son of David. My daughter is severely demonized." Usually in scenes like this that we read in the Bible, the disciples want the bothersome person to go away and leave them alone, while Jesus compassionately tells them to let the person come to him, and then he grants whatever they ask, but not here. Could we call this woman a God botherer? Are you a God botherer? You are. God bothering is a sarcastic description of prayer that worked its way into the English language in the 19th century. While it was coined as a nasty put-down, it seems particularly appropriate when applied to the encounter between Jesus and the Canaanite woman. In her persistent appeals to Jesus, she is literally God-bothering. And as they say in Yiddish, she's nudja, which means a mega pest, a super nagger. Now, hopefully none of you are like that in your relationships. Hopefully. But she's more than that. She's on a mission to save her daughter. And she won't be brushed off by the disciples or be overawed by Jesus. She believes only Jesus can save her daughter, and she won't stop petitioning him or bothering him until he does. But Jesus doesn't smile and say, "My daughter, your prayers have been answered. Go in peace." No. When she asks for his help, he tells her it's not appropriate to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Who are the dogs in your life? Make no mistake, we all have them. The dogs in our lives are the people we prejudge, the people whose worth we judge as less than our own, simply because of some characteristic about them that we don't like, don't approve of, or simply don't understand. Dogs are all around us. Anyone can be a dog. All we have to do is take away someone's humanity, and we turn that person into a dog. Once someone's been reduced to the anonymity of dog status, then it's incredibly easy for us to treat them any way we want, without consequence. After all, they're not like us, they're not as good as we are, so why should we worry about treating them the way we're treated? We live in an increasingly anonymous and fragmented world. More and more every day, we are being isolated from the rest of humanity. We travel in large, comfortable metal cocoons we call cars. No one can hear us when we call them names for cutting us off in traffic. We live in homes that are separated from other homes by land or high fences. We speak to each other by text message, but rarely face to face. And we don't look into the eyes of people in this isolated world. Travel on the train to Perth. There is nobody interested in anybody else except when the person next to you is talking on their phone in a loud voice and having a domestic. And you think, oh, for goodness sake, really? Everybody's on their phones or their electronic devices. But you know, it's a reflection of fear in our society. Our daughter-in-law is English, and she said, when you travel on the tube in London, you don't look at anybody. You're really scared to look at anybody because you don't know how they're going to respond to you. Anonymity is the name of the game, and on top of that, we're constantly being told that we should fear or hate everyone who doesn't look or think the way we do. We can almost easily start treating people as children of God when we get to know them as children of God. We can only begin to treat people with the love of neighbour that Jesus called for when we get to know them as human beings first. It's all too easy to mistreat people whom we have dehumanised. It's harder to treat someone as a dog if we know his or her name or if we know about their family and their lives. Next time you hear someone reduce an entire segment of the world's population into a stereotype or a punchline, or the next time you're tempted to do so yourself, remember that every one of those people has a name, has a mother, has a father, a life story that will almost certainly have similarities to your own. We are all different, but we are all God's children. But in our interactions with people, we don't always act like that. First, Matthew tells us that Jesus ignored the woman altogether, and I quote, "But he answered her not a word." Add to that the fact that the disciples kept on insisting that he send her away. And eventually when Jesus answers the woman, firstly he says, "I wasn't sent to anyone but the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And then follows it up with, "It's not appropriate to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But the woman wouldn't take no for an answer. This dog of a woman, it's an interesting play on words. Canaanite, it's canine, right? The Canaanites were thought of by the Jews, especially the Canaanite woman, because remember where women were placed in the Jewish society. This Canaanite dog was quite willing to play the part, to become a dog. Literally, get down on all fours begging. So not only a Canaanite and a woman, but now also a dog. And she responds to Jesus with, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table." To which Jesus replies, "Woman, great is your faith. Be it done to you even as you desire." And her daughter was healed instantly. So what gift does this Canaanite woman have? She has humility. Her willingness to let go of every last vestige of pride, she has thrown herself at the feet of a wandering preacher that leads her daughter to be healed. From the very beginning of his God-given ministry, Jesus has been consistent and insistent that his message was directed to the spiritually poor, to the lowest of the low in heart, to the emotional down and outers, to those knocked down on all fours and willing to crawl, to the dogs, in other words. I hear two things in this passage. First, have you ever wondered whether or not you measure up to God's expectations? You've ever wondered that? That if there were, say, minimal standards for faithfulness and good works, you might come up lacking? Some churches actually impose regulations upon you that if you haven't got this, 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 and this, you actually don't qualify. I always find that really quite amazing, right? I could never be part of a church that says, unless you speak in tongues, you're not baptised in the Holy Spirit, because I don't speak in tongues. But I can't be a member of those churches, right? Unless you've been baptised as an adult, you're not real as a Christian. Any church that puts its regulations upon people doesn't understand how God works. The Canaanite woman's great faith has nothing to do with how good she was or how much she was devoted to God or whether she's done good deeds for others. It had to do with her need for a power beyond herself and for her willingness to confess it. We are very prideful and sometimes we are not prepared to admit we need help outside ourselves. Right? Anybody here in that category never wishes to admit they need help outside themselves? They can do it themselves. Right? Listen to this from Matthew. Jesus once told the Pharisees, "Those who are healthy have no need for a physician, but those who are sick do." But you go and learn what this means. "I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came to call the righteous, not the righteous, but the sinners to repentance." If this passage tells us anything, it's that there's a place in God's kingdom for the least, the last, and the lost. In other words, there's a place for you and me. It also tells us there's a place for others as well, for those we might least expect to be included in God's great family. If you ask the Jews if they could think of anyone who'd never be invited to the heavenly banquet, they would have told you, the Canaanites. Yet here is a Canaanite woman calling on Jesus to heal her daughter. And in spite of his initial response, he not only healed her daughter, but commended her for her strong faith. On the ladder of ritual purity, this woman was near the top, while the Pharisees and the scribes were on the bottom rung. Next time you run across someone you think is beyond God's grasp, think again. God has a special place in his heart for the underdog, for those you'd never, ever expect to carry God's favour. Who would have thought that John Newton, a slave trader, would end up writing one of the most famous hymns of all time, Amazing Grace? Dare to have the faith of a dog and willing to take your place at the Master's feet. The Lord be with you.